making shit up.
Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
In my opinion, Sync is kind of like a cut-up, you know, like a Burrow-esque multimedia collage. And we discussed last week about the dark side of the rainbow. But today, we're going to talk to a gentleman who has created the next step of that, I would say. He's actually mixed two movies in an album. And the way that they relate is something that you have to experience. It's almost like it's really uncanny, the mind advancements this is going to take us to. I'm talking to Bill Klaus today on 42 Minutes with Doug. It is the 3rd of April, 2012, and also joining the conversation is Kevin Tinfoil, in my opinion, another history maker of Sync. On his radio show, we discovered the Donkey Kong World Trade King Kong connection, which changed my whole game up. But anyways, just sending some puns out there. How are you today, Bill?
I'm doing excellent. It's good to be here.
So, you know, I saw the other day that you were mentioning that you actually go out with headphones on to new movies and listen to them with albums as well. Is that true?
Yeah, it sounds batshit crazy. And the idea when it first came to me was exactly that. It seemed absolutely for the lunatic files. But honestly, if you walk around downtown Chicago or the suburbs of any city with your headphones on, it's kind of like that movie Being There when he's in the car. He's like, it's like television. It's just, you know, deeper. Anytime you walk around with music and you just watch reality happen outside of you, you're basically in a Sync theater. And depending on where your mind is at, the narrative can be simple or it can be very, very complicated. So if I'm listening to music on an iPod and I just happen to come across a big, huge screen with images, and I sit there for, I don't know, 20 minutes or 2 hours and just watch the images as I'm listening to my music, I'm really not doing anything different from day-to-day experience with the kind of technology that we have.
You know, David Lynch, some of his directors of photography actually film the film, you know, when they're filming, they actually have music going in headphones also. And that brings up an interesting idea that it's not the soundtrack to the movie, but the soundtrack that the guy running the camera wants to, the aesthetic or mood he wants to create for that scene. And so it ends up becoming a mashup.
The thing that's interesting to me is that you took Kubrick's 2001, you took Kubrick's The Shining, and then you took Pink Floyd, The Wall. And you play them all together, but all three are having relationships. Like, The Shining is having a relationship with 2001, and The Wall...
How did you discover the Transformer, Bill? How did this happen?
All right. This might go on for a little bit, and chime in if you want to ask a question. But I'm going to try to piece it together. It was a very long process. It probably started 10 years ago when I first saw Dark Side of the Rainbow. It was something that I had heard about for a couple of years. And again, when I had heard the idea myself, the concept of it, I thought it was pretty idiotic. But then just having the time and the curiosity after hearing about it so much, I actually decided to run the experiment myself, and I found it mind-blowing. I was just amazed at how my perception of the concept was so far removed from the reality of the experience. And when I actually saw it in action, I was almost amazed that people didn't talk about it more, because it was just an absolutely beautiful experience. And I became somewhat obsessed by it. I remember watching that arrangement 5 or 6 times in the span of a week.
Yeah, same thing. We were just talking about that last week. When I first experienced it, it wasn't like a one day or a one viewing thing. You watched it a fucking couple of times. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Like, so how many times have you seen the Transformer?
Well, let me just get back to something real quick, because I've noticed that a lot of people on this show have basically pinpointed that Dark Side of the Rainbow as a turning point in their perception of reality, especially as reality as pertains to how it gets entangled into media. And when I was discovering Dark Side of the Rainbow, I really wasn't savvy with the internet or with internet groups, so I pretty much felt like I was on an island with this fascination. I didn't really have very many people to talk to with it, and I think that it wasn't until 5 or 6 years later that I, because of this fascination and how I carried it through the years, that I started to search for it out in the internet, and that's when I started to find all these different groups. You know, the Secret Sun, the Stygian Port, the work of Jake Kotz, and more than anyone else, Mark LeClaire's work over at The Wrong Way Wizard, who was an absolute 100% god to me at one point with his writing, because he just spoke about it with such clarity and such an absolute understanding of the mechanics of it all. So there really is like a 6-year gap between the first time I worked with this to finding the others out there on the internet. And really, if I'm going to take any part of the story further, I have to include Mark LeClaire as damn near an equal partner in the discovery of this arrangement.
You're talking about The Wrong Way.
Right. He's got a number of aliases. And he's an interesting guy and a fabulous writer. Let's see if we can pin down some of his masks. So there's The Wrong Way Wizard, but then also seems like there's one, Artislav Mel.
Artislav Mel, that is correct.
Yeah.
Old Artislav Mel.
He's a good guy. Well,
I'm not going to talk bad about The Wrong Way Wizard. I won't do it, because he has influenced me as well. He's popped up in weird places in my history, let's say, and it's helped me along quite a few times. But I won't really hide that. Anyways, okay, so did he tell you to basically try to mix these two?
Essentially, I was a big fan of his writing, and it was during this time when I was discovering blogs, like I said, like the Secret Sun is another blog that was just monumental in forming the tools I used to perceive media and how I started to look at things differently. Somewhere between my contacting Mark LeClaire and before then when I did The Dark Side of the Rainbow. So sometime between 2001 and like 2009, I did the first sync experiment where I actually went to a movie that I had never seen and watched it with Dark Side of the Moon, which I believe was Harry Potter's 6th film. And so I was basically reunited with the idea of mixing albums with films through this crazy idea of doing it in a live environment. And so that resonated so strongly with me that there was really something there, but I knew it wasn't tied into some sort of conspiracy that, you know, Pink Floyd actually went in and orchestrated an album to a movie. that this was working on a much higher level than something very temporal. And so the few voices that were sort of speaking to me about where I needed to go were people like Christopher Knowles at The Secret Sun and people like Mark LeClair at The Wrong Way Wizard. So I really became a student of those two. But due to somehow whatever psychic leanings I have, which I believe there is a division there within the community, I tended more towards the writings of Mark LeClair at The Wrong Way Wizard. So I started to try to have a dialogue with him, and I started to sort of present some of my experiments. And so we developed a dialogue where we went back and forth with essentially aligning Pink Floyd albums to Stanley Kubrick movies. And over the course of many months, we would try new albums with different movies and share our insights. And we eventually basically locked down that 2001, The Shining, and Eyes Wide Shut, a specific correlation to Pink Floyd albums Metal, The Wall, and Dark Side of the Moon. So we started to basically take these as our six, essentially lines of a hexagram. These were our six lines. And we started to sort of manipulate them in different ways to sort of basically casting, you know, I Ching readings and finding new things whenever we mixed them up. And at some point during this experimentation with these movies and these albums, LeClair came up with his own theory that I was willing to help him support, and we were going to do a blog on it together to push this material out there to the public. But at some point, I found my own path with these six works, and out of my own basically idea, I found this arrangement that I call the Kubrick Transformer, which was different, which had a different timing code than the ones that LeClair was positing as the basis of his work. So at that point, we didn't really go separate ways. We just sort of had completed the work that we were meant to do together. And so I took what I got out of it, and he took what he got out of it. And basically at this point, I'm presenting sort of the star child out of the work that we did. The thing that came out of it is this thing I call the Kubrick Transformer. And I think it, well, I mean, you guys have seen it now, and I'd love to hear some of your comments about it.
I got some stuff written. For one thing, like I said, you see your relationship in, outside of the wall, but there's also, like, the wall, like, overshadows the whole thing because of its content of being crazy. It changes the relationship of The Shining and Hal as to, like, you really get a vivid idea that at the same time Hal is going crazy and becoming a murderer, Jack is becoming crazy and becoming a murderer, and what all that has to do with Jupiter, the planet, and relationship to the room 237. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, it's a really nice texture right there.
Well, going back a little bit to your question,
I had that other question. How many times have you seen the Transformer?
This is the weirdest thing about it. On some level, because of how many times I was watching these films and listening to these albums, my unconscious brain has seen this in many different ways probably 500 times now or something like that, you know? Because how many times have I watched 2001? How many times have I watched The Shining? And how many times have I listened to The Wall?
But now, like I was just telling you, is there a narrative to it? Like, in my head, I have that whole narrative of Hal getting to Jupiter and Jack entering room 237, and at the same time, homeboy screaming about being crazy in the wall. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a narrative there. I mean, do you have a narrative? Do you understand those deep, like, relationships? Do you even have a model, or is it every time different?
I would say this, and in my dream of dreams and in my hope of hopes, the way I visualize the Cougar Transformer as it stands, as an 82-minute piece of work, is that it approximates a tracing board, and it also approximates Finnegan's Wake, in that every time you go into it, you always bring something new with the observer. And so the story that you see now, if you put the Kubrick Transformer on 5 years from now, you'll see the old narrative that you had 5 years before, but you'll develop a completely new narrative to the story. And in that moment, that will be the narrative. And then if you watch it 5 years after that, the same thing will occur. It's like the river that you never step in the same river twice.
Oh.
You know, this thing will conserve the narrative that you have in the moment. But then when you watch it 5 years later, you'll revisit where you were 5 years ago, but you'll also see where you've come, where you've arrived to in 5 years later. So this is something that I think that needs to be watched, much like a movie like 2001. I remember first seeing 2001 when I was 5 years old, when it was being played on HBO in my grandmother's house. And this is like 1981. And
right.
I had never seen anything like 2001. And I can still remember that day being in that small room watching that film. And I had seen 100 films when I was 5 years old. But there's something about that film that completely abducted me in that moment. And I can go back to that memory even so today. I just feel like maybe the arrangement of these three things takes it to a different level. And it's hopefully something that people who really resonate with it, they'll keep it with them for the rest of their lives. I can't imagine what the Kubrick Transformer is going to look to me when I'm 60 years old. And being able to sort of see myself at 35, see myself at 45, see myself at 55 within the reflective nature of this piece of work.
It's just cool. I mean, because, like, you can watch it and see how when Wendy, I think that's her name,
yep.
Jack's and wife, she finds the book. It's like the printout of Hal. You know what I mean? Like around the same time that it's crossing David Bowman's mind that Hal's gone nuts, Wendy's also like, and then the way that you have The Shining up underneath it, like when 2001 is in intermission, you're getting engaged with what's happening in The Shining, but then later on you're only paying attention to 2001, and then something will happen down below, and you'll be like, oh, you know what I'm saying? Because like when the Star Child is born, the blood is coming down the elevator. It's like there's definitely a birth scene going on.
Absolutely. That image to me haunts me. It seems just absolutely literal and obvious that
right.
The birth of a Star Child can be an enlightening and incredible moment, but there's the reality of the blood and the savagery of actual human birth. That
right.
If you want the one, you have to accept the other.
In a way, birth is murder because you're killing something. Like, as soon as it has given birth, or you've given birth to something, you've killed it, it'll die eventually. You've made death happen to something. I mean, that's what, when the guy shows up, at the Overlook Hotel with the cat, he shows up and he's all in red. You know what I'm saying? Or no, he's not in red, but he walks through that red corridor. Meanwhile, you have the red-suited Bowman and his birthing on top of the screen. Do you know what I mean? So there's, and it flips back and forth like that. There's a lot of red corridors at the right time. It's almost like a birth canal. All of the ship is a birth canal. I realized also that the penis shape of the spaceship they were in is really important, with the little seed coming out with the pod. So David Bowman's like this. It's for certain, no doubt about it, a birth and death kind of interplay between the two. Do you think Kruger kept that in mind? I mean, Kruger kind of would have to have known that he was. I mean, what's the magic behind Kruger? What's the magic behind Pink Floyd? Is it just these bands?
Here's what my current feeling is on the magic of Kubrick and the magic of Floyd. Terrence McKenna, I think, says it better than anybody in a lecture he gives called Surfing Kinnegan's Wake. And he talks about the alchemists and the magicians of 1,000 years ago, and their whole goal was to try to draw spirit down into matter, to turn lead into gold, right? They wanted to condense all of the universe into an object called the Philosopher's Stone. This was basically the patterns of their thought, and they were desperately trying to bring back evidence that this was possible, okay? Now, what Terrence McKenna says is that the novel that evolved and became extremely popular in the 19th century is this fractal microcosm, this object that pulls all of the universe into one small digestible hunk. And what he says is Finnegan's Wake, and I would argue also Ulysses, form the highest level of alchemy and magic in drawing spirit into matter and forming a philosopher's stone. And that if everything were to disappear today, but you had Ulysses and Finnegan's Wake, you could rebuild the entire universe from what was inside it. Okay? So the novel at that point becomes the pinnacle of magical and alchemical creation. Now, Kubrick, seeing that Joyce got there first with the novel, said, all right, I'm not going to do it with the novel. I'll do it with film. And so when he made 2001, A Space Odyssey, he made his first stab at drawing all the fractal information and essence of the universe and put it into one object, which is the monolith, which is the film screen. So at that moment, he had made his object. But he also went into the nighttime, the dream logic that Joyce went into with Finnegan's Wake, and there you have The Shining. So at this point, we have Kubrick's Ulysses, and we have Kubrick's Finnegan's Wake in 2001 in The Shining. Now, Floyd, Pink Floyd, looked at Kubrick and said, fuck, that guy got there first with film. Well, no one's made the alchemical album yet. No one has brought it down into an album. So that became their quest. And so what you have here is you have your two hunks of pure, just, I don't know, use the term you need to use, but you have three pieces of evidence of man's ability to draw spirit into matter. You have basically three philosopher's stones. Each one can tell you the whole story of mankind if you just sit down and meditate upon it for a couple of years. Now, the funny thing about the Kubrick Transformer is I have not done any editing or splicing of these stones. I merely just arrange them next to each other. I triangulate them, but I don't let them intrude upon each other. The only person who puts them together is the human mind. So when you put these three stones together, someone could walk past and say three stones, but another person looking at them, all of a sudden doesn't see three stones. Someone sees one huge stone. Someone sees the three objects become one. Someone sees the Trinity become one sort of divine expression. And its sync is basically the education of learning how to see the three become one. And that's what I hope I've achieved with the Kubrick Transformer.
Have you guys seen how the Star Wars films also line up? I once had a couple TV sets sit next to each other and had episode 1 and episode 4. And even like if you start them both at the same time with the scrolls and such, and when you get to the point where the one person in episode one is talking about, like, there's some sort of lackey saying, "We've lost the transmission, sir." On the other screen, you have Darth Vader saying, I want that transmission found, or I know that transmission was beamed aboard this vessel," something like that.
This
alchemical, like, fold that you guys are talking about, this, like, reflection of two mirrors being put up against each other, it seems like it's something that is not just Kubrick-related, but is something that other directors are also creating in that same facet.
Now, see, I was just watching this morning a gentleman who's got a couple of, I'll have to find this link and put it up, but he does, like, actors. He did Dan Aykroyd. So he takes Dan Aykroyd now, and The Great Outdoors, Dan Aykroyd pulls John Candy behind, you know, in The Great Outdoors with the bear, and John Candy's, you know, being pulled by Dan Aykroyd. Well, Dan Aykroyd becomes the bear and Yogi Bear and gets pulled around on the pond in the skis, but he played them next to each other, and that's what I was wondering. I've also seen somebody who's influenced by the Wrong Way Wizard, John Kidd, put The Mask and The Majestic together and played them. But there's something to it. There's, like, these themes. I like what he called it. He called it tones. Well, so that means, like, or he called it stones, actually. But stones and tones are the same to me, and that means, like, it's like the same. It's like a harmony. Like, there definitely is a harmony in the Transformers. I see it. I want to watch Transformers or the Transformer a couple of more times because I've got it playing in the background and it's still screwing with my head because I see more each time. But they definitely go together and the wall's not like obtrusive there. I wanted to get into the thought of going to see John Carter with both the wall and the dark side of the moon because, I mean, that's got to be something. I mean, you just go to brand new movies. Are you going to go to Titanic with, like, say, you know what I mean? Like, and last week we were talking to MK Ultra, who's done it to quite a few different movies.
Yeah, his work is brilliant.
I think so, too. I agree with you. I mean, do you have any more? Like, I already asked you if you had a catalog, but that was what I was getting at. I've seen other people who have, like, different ones they've listed off that they've discovered.
If you're just joining us, we're 27 minutes into 42 minutes. This is Doug, and as normal, I have Will with me, and today we are talking with Bill Klaus about the Kubrick Transformer. And I got my copy of the Kubrick Transformer in New York City as a member of the Sink in the City event, as an audience member, and I also saw a portion of it live. Let's say we've got everyone interested now, Bill. How do they get a hold of a copy of this? Because the copy I got is beautiful. It has pictures, and so it's a nice little object, you know, that you put together here. Thank you so much. How can someone else get a copy of this?
I think one element to this project that I really, really love is that there's a barrier there that it's not very accessible in an instant gratification way, like what our whole culture is based upon. When you want it, you can download it. But really, from where I come from 20 years ago, when I became obsessed with a band or a movie and I wanted to watch it, I'd have to hunt it down. I'd have to go talk to people, go to record stores, maybe have to order it, wait 3 weeks, pay a lot of money to see it. If anyone wants to watch this, the instructions I give on my Blogspot, it's a recipe, you know. It is an alchemical recipe. you can go to Amazon and for $26 buy the materials. Now, if you don't have a laptop or if you don't have a TV with a DVD player, then talk to a friend, combine your resources, and build this thing. And watch it actually happen right in front of you. It's kind of like the Anarchist Cookbook that taught you how to make your own LSD if you were so inclined. You know, this is true formula. And it only costs about $26 to brew up a batch. Now, through the fate of the universe, an old friend of mine from high school came into town who I hadn't seen in many years, and we got to talking, and he seemed interested, so I showed him the arrangement. And he was playing tennis with someone the next week who happened to be a film student who let him download a pretty expensive film editing program. And out of the kindness and belief in the project, my buddy learned how to use this film editing program and edited what you have, Doug, and what you have, Will, in the DVD that I gave out to certain people. It's just a streamlined, perfect edit of how it works. Now, I don't think I'm going to be sending out too many more copies. I think I've put out about 111 of these things to the world. Some of them I just walked around college campuses and asked people, hey, are you a Stanley Kubrick fan? And if they said yes, I said, here you go. So there's copies of this floating out there with people who have absolutely no idea what it was that I handed out to them. Plus, there's about 30 copies that went to the Sync Book, and then there's copies that I mailed out to people who expressed interest to me via email. So on some level, the physical transformer in the form of a DVD, there's like 111 UFOs flying around just about every continent of the world right now. But what really the UFO is still out there, and anyone can build it. Anyone has the formula now to build it and to make their own in their own home. And if this thing really is going to penetrate into the unconscious fabric of what I think the new generation of media-savvy people, this thing over the next 5-10 years will grow. And I'm hoping that 10 years from now, I'll hear back from just a random person or I'll overhear someone talking about this thing. I'm really interested to see how this thing works its way through the collective sphere of humanity.
You know, that's a great idea, because the thing that I liked about it the most was I wish somebody was in the room, because I was almost saying stuff out loud, you know what I mean? And I
Absolutely.
Think that this is designed to increase the conversation. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
That's how I experienced Dark Side of the Rainbow, too. It was almost a collective effort. And like you said, we had to go out. I was just talking about this. I had to go. I didn't think about it in the same terms until you said something, but that's how my experience with Dark Side of the Rainbow happened. Like, we all had to get the materials together, and it took a while to find the exact right copy, and then we all had to sit there and play it. But that's a really interesting way to put it. I never thought of that.
Well, this is the thing the building of it yourself provides, it instills into your mind a seed of doubt. At some point when you're working through this process and building it, your mind says to yourself, this shit better work. I hope I didn't waste my time on some fucking hoax. What if I watch this thing and it's complete bullshit? And it's that sort of ingredient that is, I think, almost essential to really unlocking the brain's ability to the upper circuits, as Robert Anton Wilson would say, that the higher circuits from just the terrestrial circuits, they need that gnawing doubt that, maybe this is bullshit. Maybe it's not working. Because then you know for a fact that when it works, that doubt just is obliterated. And it's in the obliteration of that doubt that's almost the kindling for the fireworks. And that's when all of a sudden you just don't know what the fuck happened. And you're just sitting there, like you said, talking out loud, saying, does anybody see this?
Well, are you artistless, Mel? No, Bill Cloud, be honest. I got a bet going. Are you the wrong?
You know, I'd love to say yes and get that thing going. That'd be hilarious. That's probably the highest compliment I've ever received with this work. But no, I am just William Klaus.
Talk about you a little bit. So what part of the world are you in?
Chicago, heart of the Midwest.
Chicago.
And now, you know, Chicago is an interesting town, period. It's got a lot of thinking. Basically, Chicago is considered to be like a think Oz in a way, sort of like New York. But, you know, alchemically, I want to talk about your blog while we still have a second. Because
okay.
I noticed that the name of your blog is Ayahuasca. It said, as we go up, we go down. Is that correct? .blogspot.com?
That's a post that I put up, yeah, about the fast that I'm currently on.
Okay, so how do people get to your blog?
That would be IAHUASCA.blogspot.com.
Okay. Well,
ayahuasca like the iMac or the iPad. So,
well,
connecting
electronic alchemy.
Yeah.
Where did you get that name?
Where did I get the name?
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, I think to reflect upon the whole building of the formula, I think that star child of sync would be something like the ayahuasca brew in the Amazon rainforest. You got these evolving creatures in this massive forest. How do they get to the point where they know, take this vine and this leaf, put it in a pot for 8 hours, drink it, and then you'll see what you see. How did they get to that point? No one really knows. They just say the spirits guided them to it. But in reality, I think it was a sort of alchemical trial and error mixed in with intuition that led them to know that this is where it's at. So when I started to combine these movies with these images, and certain ones would be a lot brighter, certain ones would convey a hell of a lot more narrative, I started to notice that I can get these components on the Amazon.com, which is in the heart of the rainforest where ayahuasca was formed. And
nice.
So it's this reflect as above, so below. Below, you have the rainforests of plant-based ayahuasca. Above, in the newest sphere, you have this internet landscape. And if you have the right intuition and the right knowledge, you can, out of there, order these things, mix them up, and through the amazing technology of an iPod or an iPhone, you can have these experiences. And you can share these experiences with other people, and they'll feel or see similar things. And from there, a conversation grows. And from there, you have teaching. You have a structure. You have what it is we do as human beings. So I just sort of felt this sort of thing that was forming and evolving right in front of our eyes was just really the natural extension of what happened thousands of years ago.
Okay, so we got about 4 minutes left. I want to say
something out there.
What's that?
Do you mind if I toss something out there real quick?
Oh, yeah. Actually, I was just going to say, you know, thank you to Kevin Tinfoil for joining us today and Bill Klaus as well. What were you going to say, sir?
I just wanted to throw out there that I happened to have stumbled upon a really odd little sink that was almost in like a yin and yang type of fashion between the Great Conjunction within the Dark Crystal film. And earlier that day, I happened to be watching like this odd little eclipse on in the movie Pitch Black, and they just seemed strangely interconnected when I happened to watch the second film. and I just, it was just odd that I happened to have watched the two films in the same day, that I just wanted to toss it out there that it seemed relevant to the sync situation.
Yeah, I can understand what you're saying. I mean, that's what opened me up a lot in my head during this conversation, is the fact that I see now the relationship that certain arts or artwork done by individuals relate to each other.
But
I mean,
wait,
everybody.
Do you know about Douglas Adams' piece of sponge cake? So this is the same argument that Bill just made, except instead of the Philosopher's Stone, you can find the entire universe in this one piece of sponge cake. And what would you say about that, Bill, in about a minute and a half?
I would say that all artists are alchemists. All artists are magicians. Some work at a first grade level. Some work at a collegiate level. Some never went to school, and they work on their own chaotic level that we don't even comprehend. So if everyone's doing the same thing, everyone's trying to make the same thing in its just basic form, it's trying to draw spirit into matter, then it makes sense that these things, that certain things would combine. Like you said, like harmonies, like tones, like colors. With Kubrick, in a movie like 2001, it's as if he created green. You know, it's as if he created a color, a primary color. And with that, you can do amazing things with shading, with cutting it up, with combining it. Some artists make movies that, you know, seem like the scribbling of a child. But if you've ever seen a parent look at their three-year-old scribblings, they look at it with as much joy as I would look at 2001. So it just is a matter of relativity and perspective. It's just a matter of understanding that everyone is basically working the system. And every now and then a great work pops up and just basically demands your attention and throws you into obsession. And hopefully you're able to digest it into something that you can share with other people. And what I've done with the Kubrick Transformer, hopefully I've thrown something into the pot that everyone else can basically learn from and enjoy and inspire people to create other Transformers, other arrangements.
And that's all the time we've got. It's been 22 minutes. It's been fabulous. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Will. Thank you, Kevin. Talk to you next week. Thank you.
Happy birthday, Doug.